It's been a privilege, it's been a humbling honor to serve you, to serve all of the people of our great state.
Join me in beginning our third century in Illinois with hope and optimism and living every day better for the 200 years we lived before it.
Democrats have taken control of all statewide elected offices, including the governor's mansion. Republican Bruce Rauner will serve just one term. And come January, Democrat J.B. Pritzker will be the next governor of Illinois. Meanwhile, in Congress, Republicans held on in central and southern Illinois, but in the suburbs, Congressman Peter Roskam and Randy Holkren lost their seats. Here's Congresswoman-elect Democrat Lauren Underwood.
We must be a beacon of hope. We must lead by example. We are a democracy, and we demand better.
This morning, we want to hear from you. How are you feeling the day after the midterm elections? Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I am so grateful tonight to all of you in this room and those watching at home. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you for your faith in Juliana and me. Earlier this evening, I received a call from Governor Bruce Rauner, and I want to thank him for his service to this state over the last 4 years, and I wish him and his family well.
I would like to say thank you to all the people of Illinois for the opportunity to serve you.
Yeah, and I actually reached out to a ton of friends yesterday. Anybody I knew who had a big car, I was like, we need your help. So my parents' neighbors were out, friends of mine from elementary school. So it was really, you know, we put out the call and say, hey, you know, we need help. And people responded.
And was it really important for you that you cast a vote today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's been something I've been looking forward to doing. This is my first time ever voting, so I was really excited to do it. I'm really happy I was able to come here.
Join me in beginning our third century in Illinois with hope and optimism and living every day better for the 200 years we lived before it.
Sounds from yesterday's midterm elections in Illinois. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. You just heard J.B. Pritzker, Governor Bruce Rauner, and voters Katie Clegg and Sarah Nagel in Champaign. All this hour, we're going to be breaking down what the Democrats taking control of every statewide seat in Illinois means, as well as regaining a supermajority in Springfield. And we'll be talking about how much of that blue wave did sweep across the Midwest, at least when it came to governor's races. From Michigan to Wisconsin to Illinois, even Kansas, Republican governors lost their seats. We've got lots of information about all of these results for you, including congressional races. We want to hear from you this hour as well. Here's where we stand. As I said, Democrats hold all statewide offices in Illinois, the State House and the U.S. House. How does that make you feel this morning? We know a lot of races were very close. We want to hear how you're doing, whether your candidate won or lost. Give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. As always, you can tweet to 21STShow. Politico's Natasha Karecki is on the line with us from Washington. We've also got Chicago Sun-Times columnist and ABC7 political analyst Laura Washington with us from Chicago. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning, Nala.
Good morning.
Natasha, let's start with the governor's races in the Midwest. As I mentioned, it wasn't just Illinois, but Wisconsin with Scott Walker, Michigan, Kansas, all went from Republican to Democratic governors. Does that signify something to you?
It certainly does. I mean, it's the first sign that that Democrats have been able to make gains and flip some of the states that Trump won in 2016. Particularly in Wisconsin, that was probably the biggest win, at least symbolically for Democrats, to take down someone like Scott Walker, who for so long represented conservative plank of the party. He did the war against unions. He was one of the behemoths that Democrats wanted to take down. And while they had trouble in Florida and in Texas, this was one victory that they could hold up. So it was a significant win in the Midwest. And that's certainly also, with respect to the Midwest, Iowa, I will say that was one state where Democrats thought they were going to make a gain with Fred Hubble, but he was unable to topple Ken Reynolds in the end.
Natasha, how did the last night's results for the Midwest, how was it different from the rest of the country now?
Well, I think a lot of people are looking at the results this morning and scratching their heads. So here you have these different kinds of candidates who were unsuccessful. You had more progressive candidates in Andrew Gillum, who was unable to sail the victory in Florida. But then you had somebody like Fred Hubble, again, he was more of a pragmatic centrist, who ran, white male, but also unable to win. So I think Democrats right now are picking up the pieces and trying to figure out what worked and what didn't work. But certainly the Midwest made gains. When you look at Michigan, as you said, obviously Illinois is blue, but we did take the state took the governorship, and in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania also blue. So you have several states that went for Trump in 2016, and now they are turning more and more blue. That's setting up a pretty good scenario for Democrats possibly for 2020.
That's Natasha Kariki from the Politico newsroom in Washington. Laura Washington's with us as well. She's a Chicago Sun-Times columnist, and she's an ABC7 Chicago political analyst. Laura, I know there's a lot of different results here that we have last night. We've been talking about governor's races, there's congressional races, there's the state house in Illinois. What was most significant to you about last night's result?
Well, I think what was most significant to me was not so much the results themselves, but who turned out. The election results, particularly in Cook County and Chicago, show that the top demographic that turned out and the turnout itself was up around 56%, which is the largest it's been in the last 32 years. The top demographic were millennials, not older voters that tend to be in the lead. And I think that is very significant because, of course, for years, if not decades, we've been talking about the youth vote, young people turning out, and it never seems to quite happen. Well, this time it happened. And I think that bodes some promising issues for the future, particularly for the Democrats, because the Democrats, of course, tend to be a more diverse party, tend to respond. Their issues tend to be around more diversity-related issues. So I think that's one reason why you saw the blue wave in Illinois. Some people are calling it the blue NAMI.
And what, Laura, to your point about millennials, the younger vote, certainly in Champaign-Urbana, particularly at the University of Illinois, there were very long lines, with some lines with as much as 250 people in line at the Illini Union of students who were waiting to vote. So that's kind of an interesting story we saw in central Illinois over the past couple of weeks. I wanted to play some audio. I spoke last night with Ami Gandhi, who's executive director of the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. They ran the hotline, the statewide hotline for voter calls, and they were very, very busy yesterday.
Our hotline has been flooded with calls since 5 a.m. this morning, actually. We've gotten an enormous number of calls, probably surpassing what we had in the November 2016 election. And many voters are very enthusiastic about exercising their right to vote, many first-time voters, for example. But unfortunately, voters across Illinois have also faced various barriers at the polls and are calling us with a lot of problems that they're trying to get resolved.
That's Ami Gandhi with the Nonpartisan Voter Helpline in the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. We did speak with the State Board of Elections last night. They told us those problems Ami was talking about were mostly in Chicago at just a couple of polling places that did stay open late. Laura, I wonder what you've heard. Natasha, I'd love to hear you weigh in after about turnout and problems across Illinois. How do you think that went? Laura?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to Natasha. Well, yes, there were some problems in Chicago. I haven't heard about there being anything endemic and widespread. And in fact, I think there was a lot more voter engagement even before Election Day because organizers, particularly in the Democratic Party, worked very hard to get out the early vote, to get out vote by mail. They were very methodical about that. And again, there was a lot of focus on students, a lot of focus on younger people. So the energy around making sure that people got to the polls, that they got registered, that they had the documentation that they needed to have before they voted, I think that made a difference.
Natasha, with the view from Washington, to Laura's point about investments that the Democratic Party made, particularly, I guess, in especially young people, first-time voters, did we really see that come out in Illinois, you think?
I think we did. I mean, if you looked at the numbers, as Laura mentioned, in Chicago in particular, the highest numbers we'd seen in 32 years in a midterm election. I mean, that is saying something. And you know, we talked about this a little last night in some of our reporting, but we have to credit J.B. Pritzker's campaign. They not only, you know, spent a ton of money on electing Pritzker, but he ran a coordinated operation that was like a military operation and getting out the vote. And I think we're going to see a lot more mail-in ballots come in that will show like even higher numbers that will probably spell some kind of engagement across the board. But again, I think that was sort of a testament to Pritzker trying to, you know, put a stamp on things and enter office with a very strengthened hand. Democrats across the board on the statewide level and an incredibly strong scenario in both legislative chambers.
And I mean, to your point about coordination, Natasha, even the victory party last night was coordinated because everyone was lined up at J.B. Pritzker's election party. Comptroller Susana Mendoza, Treasurer Mike Frericks, Secretary of State Jesse White, basically all of them, but Attorney General Kwame Raoul were there as kind of the warm up for J.B. Pritzker. Laura Washington, I wonder how much we will see as we're thinking about a new Pritzker administration, that level of coordination as well.
I think that didn't, you're absolutely right, and that didn't start last night. They've been, since the very beginning of his campaign, he's worked very hard, as Natasha points out, to coordinate with other statewide elected candidates and local candidates and to present a front. And it's not just a front, it's the reality of unity in the Democratic Party, which you did not see, of course, on the Republican side. Bruce Rauner had a very difficult primary, barely won his primary, and had significant opposition from the right in both the primary and the general. And so they were trying to make the Democrats were trying to make the point that we are unified, we're all on the same page, and they're not.
Natasha, to Laura's point about the tone of the election, and I'm thinking particularly, especially the tone of our governor's race, was pretty nasty. But last night, at least, we heard from both Governor Rauner and Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker, both of them being very conciliatory, very respectful of the other, talking about coming together as a state. Natasha, is it that easy?
Well, you know, it will be a lot easier for J.B. Pritzker since Democrats now control everything. It is for all of us who cover this very closely. It is always nice to see there's a little bit of embracing the other side, of like putting down your weapons for an evening at least and moving forward. It'll be very interesting to see what the next chapter is for Bruce Rauner. I mean, he was very invested here. It's hard to imagine that he's just going to walk away. On the other hand, one other thing I would point out about Pritzker and the coordination, I mean, I think he's also sending a signal. He's sending a signal that he did this.
And controls the purse strings, because we heard that before from Governor Rauner, Natasha. It's not a different.
Right.
Right. Laura Washington.
And not just the purse strings, but the control in the legislature and maybe even assigned to Mike Madigan. Like, hey, you know, these people are behind me. I am coming in from a position of strength. You know, we are at the very least equals. I think he wants to mark a new day here. It'll be interesting to see.
I agree, Natasha. He's trying to send a signal, and he's basically telling Mike Madigan, I don't need your money. I don't necessarily need your clout, which is something that Mike Madigan has always been able to hold over previous gubernatorial candidates and governors and also his caucus. So J.B. Pritzker is in a position where he has the control and power and at least have the potential to be able to approach Mike Madigan as an equal partner.
I want to end by asking both of you about J.B. Pritzker. Laura Washington, you've covered J.B. Pritzker since he ran for Congress in 1998. He lost. I want to ask, as both of you know him from, I think he's very familiar among Chicago's circles as a longtime philanthropist and venture capitalist and, of course, his hotel family fortune. What does Chicago know about J.B. Pritzker that the rest of the state should know? Laura?
Well, it's interesting you bring up the Hyatt Hotel portion, because a little tidbit from the victory party last night was that it was not held.
It was at a Marriott.
At a Hyatt Hotel. It was at a Marriott, and I suspect that was very intentional, because he doesn't want to remind people of his billions and how he came to them.
Then he is now the richest politician in America, succeeding even our president. Right.
That's right, and he spent more money than our president. but he's well known in Chicago. He's seen as a very successful, accessible, and successful philanthropist. He has a very interesting and politically diverse family, and that his sister Penny Pritzker, of course, was a Commerce Secretary under Barack Obama, and was very involved in helping to elect Barack Obama at the time that J.B. Pritzker was supporting Hillary Clinton, J.B. Pritzker continues to be close to Hillary Clinton, but he was able to come together with Barack Obama around this election. And then another relative is his cousin, Jennifer Pritzker, who's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army, who also is transgender and has founded a very state-of-the-art military museum here, and is also a big contributor to Republicans, including this Attorney General candidate Erica Harrell. So very diverse, complicated family relationship there.
Well, I think we'll have to leave it at that, unfortunately. We'll let you have the last word there, Laura, because we are out of time. But I want to thank Politico's Natasha Korecki, Chicago Sun-Times, and ABC7's Laura Washington for giving us a little picture of the analysis we're going to be going into all hour. When coming up next, we're going to be talking about the congressional races, including Illinois' 13th district, which was a so close race to call that Betsy Dirksen-Lonergan hasn't even conceded yet. Ladies, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for the 21st comes from University of Illinois Press, hosting the Association of University Press's annual book, jacket, and journal show in the Link Gallery at the School of Art and Design, November 5th through the 16th. University of Illinois Press, celebrating 100 years.
Thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The story of the midterm elections is often about Congress, and that's what everyone was talking about last night. Would Republicans lose their control of the Senate and House? Well, I'm guessing you've heard that it was a split result. Let's talk about what happened here in Illinois. Democrats picked up two extra House seats.
It is my hope that it is a clear message from the 12th district of the state of Illinois, from Alton to Cairo, and Cairo back up to Mount Vernon, that we need change in this nation.
It is delightful to see that we flipped the House. And this is an election where what won was values. Don't think this is a party that won. It was values that won.
I think, look, it's manufacturing we know is important. It's agriculture. It's a growing economy. Which we've seen, especially in the last couple of years, to rebuilding our military. It's just good kind of down-home central northern Illinois issues.
We have the concern about ensuring that this economy is growing and easing regulatory burden, and that's what we focus on.
We haven't cut Social Security and Medicare. I got a record of that. We actually have implemented plans that have prolonged those programs and increased the solvency of those programs.
We must be a beacon of hope. We must lead by example. We are a democracy, and we demand better.
Lots of division, as you heard, both from Democrats and Republicans. That was Republican Mike Bost in Southern Illinois, Democrat Sean Casten in the West Chicago suburbs, Republican Adam Kinzinger in North and Central Illinois, Republicans John Shimkus and Rodney Davis from Central Illinois, and Democrat Lauren Underwood from Northern Illinois in the Western suburbs. Some of those races were really close. Sherry Bustos was also easily reelected. That was not a close race. We're talking to you now about Congress and how you're feeling about those races, how you're feeling this morning after the midterm elections. Mr. J on Twitter says he feels better. How about you? You can give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can keep tweeting as well to 21STShow. Let's start with what was probably the closest House race of the night in the 13th Congressional District that covers a big part of Central Illinois. I know lots of folks listening now are in that district. Democrat Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan hasn't even conceded yet to incumbent Republican Rodney Davis. We just heard from him there. Brian Moline is with us in our studios in Urbana, where he's the managing editor of WILL. Brian, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Nyla.
So this was the closest race of the night, at least on the congressional level in Illinois. How close was this?
AP currently has it, Nyla, as a difference of about 3,700 votes in favor of Rodney Davis. My quick tally of just county by county shows it maybe a little closer than that at about 2,200. But
wow, so it's less than 1%. Was that about 1.5%?
About 1.5%, yeah.
Wow, so it's a sign for everybody that if they think their votes don't matter, especially when it comes to these races, it certainly does. What did Congressman Davis say last night about this tight squeaker for him? So this is now, he's headed back. Is this his fourth term? Am I correct on that?
Fourth term. It'll be the first time he will serve in the minority party. And he did talk about that. He is touted his bipartisan credentials. That's one of the things he talks about a lot in the race, though he does vote with President Trump the vast majority of the time while he's been in Congress the last couple of years. But that's something that he's talked about a lot, is wanting to solve problems, not just governed by ideology.
Now, his opponent, Democrat Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan of Springfield, she hasn't conceded yet, at least as of this morning, right? Does that matter?
I don't know, Nyla. I'm a little surprised that she didn't concede last night. We got final vote results from AP at about 12:30 a.m. or so. I would have thought that maybe once that came in, she would have conceded. But I think she is probably waiting just to see what absentee ballots might be out there and wait until those are all counted, which I would presume would happen in the next day or so.
And would there be a recount when it's this close? I don't know what the automatic rules are for triggering that. Has anyone talked about that?
I have not seen any chatter about a recount yet in this race. Certainly, it could be a possibility if things tighten up more once those absentee votes are counted. But to this point, I've not seen, you know, the Londrigan campaign has not made any noise about a recount. I've not heard any chatter about that yet at all.
That's Brian Moline, who's the managing editor of WILL in Urbana. Especially for folks who were in the 13th Congressional District, we'd love to hear how you felt about the result. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Of course, any district that you're living in and listening now, we'd like to hear about how you voted, why you voted, how you're feeling this morning. Brian, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So it looks like Republicans have hung on to House seats in Central and Southern Illinois. We heard Mike Bost. We talked a lot about that race on the 21st. He was able to retain his seat. That was not the case in the Chicago suburbs. Last night, Illinois added two Democrats to its congressional delegation. Congressman Peter Roskam and Randy Holtgren represent the 6th and 14th districts, respectively, but they both lost to Sean Casten and Lauren Underwood. So that means Democrats now have 13 out of our state's 18 House seats. Jim Fuller is a senior writer with the Daily Herald. He's been covering both of those races, and he joins us from their newsroom. Hi, Jim. Welcome back to the 21st.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with these two districts. The 6th and 14th are pretty close to each other. How would you describe both of these districts?
Well, the first word that comes to mind is traditionally conservative, and that's been the voting record of both of those districts. Upper middle class, white districts for the most part. Although the 14th changed a little bit more, got a little bit more blue collar in the last redistricting, but overall. Traditionally considered very safe districts for Republicans.
And Peter Roskam has been in office for quite some time.
Yeah, he's been in office for quite a while. I mean, enough to rise through the ranks, even among his colleagues in Congress, and achieve some pretty high profile positions. He was a minority whip for a while. He's most recently chair of the House Ways and Means Subcommittee on Tax Policy, which obviously played a big role in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that we heard so much about on the campaign trail. So him losing last night, as well as his close colleague Randy Holtgren, both pretty surprising to see.
And I wonder, let's start with Sean Casten. What do we know about Sean Casten, what he did before running for Congress? What do we think made the difference for voters electing him?
Yeah, well, you know, Sean Casten, he's a clean energy businessman from Downers Grove, you know, so, you know, climate change and issues like that were certainly a part of his campaign process, and you saw him take a lot of questions on that topic on the campaign trail, but he was very aggressive in terms of, you know, positioning himself as, you know, an anti-Trump Democratic candidate. You might even say that was pretty much the central theme of his campaign, and he made no bones about you know, going after the president at pretty much all of his public appearances, and you know, I think even Peter Roskam sort of acknowledged that you know, that probably did play into last night's outcome during his concession speech last night.
Interesting. And how close was that race, Jim?
You know, both of the, you know, all the races were pretty close, and you would expect them to have been you know, close last night. You know, both the Roskam race and the Hulcrum race, you know, really just you know, came down to a matter of, you know, several thousand votes. But you know, in the end of the day, you know, both Democrats won. You know, both Sean Casten and Lauren Underwood, and you know, that had to be a wake up call for you know, the GOP party in the northern part of the state. If you look at the numbers, if you drill down a little bit, both Hulcrum and Roskam, you know, if they had just pulled in the average number of votes that they had received in the last, you know, four or five cycles, they would have won last night. Those vote totals would have been high enough to defeat the vote totals that their Democratic opponents got last night. That didn't happen. You know, that goes to show you they weren't able to bring out the base, and or some of that base ended up, you know, voting Democratic last night.
And certainly when it comes to Lauren Underwood, when I was looking at some numbers last night about how much more money she and the DCCC spent, millions more, I believe, in terms of television ads. What do we know about Lauren Underwood, where she stands politically? Certainly she has a very compelling personal story as to why she wanted to run for office.
Right. I mean, she, you know, on a campaign trail, she frequently told the story of, you know, she has a nursing background. She's from Naperville, and she worked in the Obama administration on healthcare issues. You know, so she, you know, made it very clear that healthcare and the Affordable Care Act was very near and dear to her. And, you know, she believed that Randy Hulcrum had made this pledge that, you know, come what may, I will protect folks with pre-existing conditions. And when, you know, Randy Hulcrum started, you know, casting, you know, quite a few votes to dismantle, you know, so-called Obamacare, she felt, you know, kind of betrayed. And, you know, in her words, she said, you know, that was the moment where I decided it's on, you know. And so she, that was a key issue for her on the campaign trail. And, you know, she talked about that everywhere she went, kind of utilizing her background. And the very, you know, perhaps in what was kind of a telling point in the campaign, in the last few days, you know, Randy Hulcrum and his campaign kind of staged what they called an emergency press conference to shine some light on what they felt was kind of like a resume stuffing for Lauren Underwood, basically saying, you know, yeah, she's a nurse, but she hasn't really treated patients directly in some time. And, you know, she lives, at, you know, with her parents in Naperville. And, you know, as someone who's covered Randy Hulcrum, you know, since he was, you know, a state rep, I'd never seen him go that deep into the negative on the campaign trail. And that definitely showed
us
all
a sign of,
a little bit worried coming into last night.
Right. So now we have two more Democrats from the Chicago suburbs who will be headed to Washington. Jim Fuller is a senior writer with the Daily Herald in Arlington Heights from that newsroom. Jim, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's wrap all of this up with IPR's State House reporter Brian Mackey, who's on the line from Springfield. Brian, let's start with what it looks like for Illinois in our congressional delegation. Welcome back to the 21st, Brian.
Hey, Nyla, how are you? Did you get some good rest last night?
Of course not. No. No. You and I were both working into the – you were working much longer than me into the wee hours of the morning and then back here early this morning. There's no rest for journalists on election week. How many Republicans are left, Brian, in Illinois' congressional delegation overall then?
That's 5 out of 18, down from 7. Well, I guess technically today there's still 7, but as of next January, we're going to be down to 5.
And how much do you think that does it that reflect, as we think about the way the state has shifted back and forth, as we're just hearing, we were just hearing about the Chicago suburbs, those tend to, you know, those have gone back and forth between support for Republican versus Democrat. Where do we kind of see the balance of the state shifting now when it looks like red versus blue? Do we have a sense of where the state stands?
Yeah, I mean, it perfectly encapsulates what is this national story, which is, and it's because Illinois has three regions, right? We have a Chicago, very urban area. People vote that way, typically Democratic. We have the suburbs, which have been swinging in the past, have been favorable to Republicans, but are now trending Democratic, particularly hastened, I think, by discomfort with President Trump. Those are the types of Republican voters who are least comfortable with his approach. But then you have the flip side of that, which is downstate in the rural areas. It is deep Trump country. I mean, it's as favorable to President Trump and candidates who support him as a state like Mississippi or Kansas would be. So this story of the Illinois congressional districts, where the two in the suburbs flipped to Democrats and the two downstate stayed with Republicans and President Trump after President Trump himself personally campaigned there, that is the story of how the election seems to be going across the country.
Ryan, let's move to Springfield, into the state house, into Speaker of the House Michael Madigan. He has regained a supermajority in Springfield. Can you remind us what the significance of that is?
Yeah, a supermajority means a veto-proof majority, basically. It's also enough to pass constitutional amendments, say, if somebody wanted to impose a graduated income tax in Illinois, as J.B. Pritzker has relentlessly campaigned on doing. However, it's worth noting that one of the reasons that Democrats are able to run up victories and big margins like that in the House is that they run candidates who are amenable or who can appeal to the fiscally conservative voters in the suburbs. So I talked just a moment ago about how voters are sort of moving away from President Trump on some issues like immigration, social issues perhaps, but they are still fiscally conservative minded. They don't like taxes. So the question is, the Democrats have these supermajorities now, but are they really going to be willing to vote for the tax increases that Pritzker is pushing through a graduated income tax?
Not just that. I'm also curious just about the role of, certainly, Speaker of the House Michael Madigan has been incredibly powerful. We think about how much he was pitted against Governor Rauner, but he also had his battles with Democratic Governor Quinn. And I wonder now,
and
with
Blagojevich,
right? And we will remind everybody that Speaker Madigan has been in office longer than you and I have both been alive. If that is
not true. Well, in office, yes, but not as Speaker.
In office, right? No,
yes,
in office,
yes, fair,
not
fair.
As Speaker. In office, correct.
But yeah, and your guests in the beginning of the show, we're talking about how Pritzker doesn't really need the speaker in terms of his money or his clout or things like that. But that's exactly what Rauner thought coming into office. And what it turns out you do need the speaker for is passing legislation through the Illinois House of Representatives. So assuming, and this I suppose is a question, but I wait for the evidence to come in otherwise, assuming the speaker holds on to his speakership, that Pritzker is going to have to find a way to work with him. And he laid the groundwork for that in the primary, while the other major candidates, Chris Kennedy and Daniel Biss, were attacking Speaker Madigan, saying it was time for him to go. Pritzker kept his powder dry. He was very diplomatic. And that's something that I think is one of Governor Rauner's big missed opportunities. When he came into office, one could have imagined him working with Speaker Madigan, who has not always been a friend of public labor unions in Illinois, who was willing to change the pension systems to reduce benefits for workers. But because Governor Rauner came out of the box attacking Speaker Madigan, it set them up as enemies, and the relationship never really got off the ground.
We're going to take a break. Brian, if you can stick around with us just after the break, I just want to end with the after the break, just asking you about the Pritzker administration, what we might expect to see in these first year or so. You're listening to our midterm coverage. It's the day after the midterms, and we've been talking about the results all across Illinois. We started big with the governor and with and talking about statewide offices. We've been talking about our congressional delegation. We'd love to hear from you. After the break, we're also going to be speaking with some voters about how they voted, about how they're feeling today. If you want to join our conversation, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Stay tuned. We'll continue this conversation just after this short break. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about Illinois' results post-midterm elections with State House reporter Brian Mackey. In a couple minutes, we're going to be talking to individual voters, and we'd like to hear from you, how you've been feeling. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to Cecil in Champaign. Hi, Cecil. Welcome to The 21st. How are you doing this morning?
Hi. I'm doing great. I wanted to just basically tell you that I think this is great. The level of voting, the involvement of citizens, I just think it's fantastic. And I like, you know, personally, I like the way the votes came out. I also wanted to mention when it comes to all those votes that have been recorded and the amount of people voting, the activism of voters, I think that's due to a lot of the folks that have been really, really hitting it hard. And here locally, for example, in our city, particularly there was a guy named Mike Ingram who was elected to office, but he was out there willing to take anybody to any poll anywhere, all during the day and even prior to election day for early voting. And I just want to, you know, give accolades to someone that's willing to do that sort of thing.
Thanks for that, Cecil. In fact, we're going to hear in a few minutes about some other ladies that were taking people, ferrying college students around. Let's go back to Brian Mackey for a minute here. Brian, as we're thinking about all of these election results, I'm just wondering for you, what was the most significant thing about yesterday evening?
Well, from a national perspective, it obviously has to be Democrats taking over the U.S. House of Representatives. This is going to give them the power to investigate President Trump. And it'll be interesting to see whether President Trump tries to work with them on legislation or continues to try to separate and draw contrasts between himself and the Democrats heading into his presumed reelection battle in 2020.
And what do you think is most significant for us here in Illinois?
Well, again, it's the top of the ticket. Governor Rauner's ending of his term and J.B. Pritzker coming in, I think it's interesting that a state that has traditionally favored career-type politicians, professional politicians, is going to continue, I've said this before, is going to continue its experiment with letting amateurs run state government, people with no political experience. But in this big money era of politics, that seems to be the way of things. And party organizations see somebody coming with billions of dollars and the ability to fund not only their own campaign, but other campaigns at all levels of government. That is something they have been welcoming with open arms.
That's Brian Mackey, who's the State House reporter for Illinois Public Radio. Stay tuned to this NPR station for today and the rest of the week. You'll continue to hear from Brian with his analysis and reporting on what's been going on. Brian, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Good to be with you, Nyla.
To Cecil's point, we know turnout was high. The unofficial numbers from the state aren't in yet, but the State Board of Elections did tell us that voter registration was even higher than in 2016. In Champaign County, unofficial numbers from the county clerk's office showed turnout was at 64%. WILL reporters Lee Gaines and Anna Casey spoke to voters yesterday. Here's some of what they told them.
Something I've been looking forward to doing. This is my first time ever voting, so I was really excited to do it.
This is probably the longest we've seen all day. I was here a couple hours ago and it was contained to the fourth floor, but now it's over 200 people in line, probably more like 250 at this point.
I'm very passionate about voting rights, voter participation. If someone makes an effort to vote, there's no reason why it should take hours. Honestly, we would all just walk into the line and say, does anyone want to ride to a polling place?
Yeah, that's why I found out about it. I had just gotten there, and then I heard you say, like, if you need a ride, I was like, thank you, because I saw a giant line.
Yeah, people responded right away. I mean, I would go in and say, does anyone want to go to another polling place with a shorter line? And I would be back out the door in 90 seconds.
I'm just concerned about making sure that people have the right to vote. And that's what's important right now, is that every student has the right to vote, that they're not forced to wait in long lines, and that we ensure that everyone is able to vote this election.
You heard from Sarah Nagel, Katie Clegg, Max Weiss, all voters in Champaign. They were excited to vote, even though there were long lines, especially among students at the U of I. We've been talking about that this hour. Katie actually heard about those long lines. She drove over to campus to take students to other polling places. All morning, we've been asking how you're feeling today. You can give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. On the line with me now is Stephanie Van Ordstrand. Stephanie is co-founder of the group Voices from the Prairie in Princeton. That's in Western Illinois. I'm also joined by Carolyn Schaefer, who's a member of Voices from the Prairie. Stephanie, Carolyn, welcome to the 21st. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us on.
Stephanie, let's start with you. What were you feeling after the 2016 election that inspired you to create this group?
Lots of questions as to how the election got to where it was, the results, what it meant for, you know, the country as a whole, many of the same questions that so many other people had. But what, you know, being here in rural Illinois, one of the things was trying to verbalize and actually figure out what that meant for us, where we went from here. And so, as it turned out, in January of 17, another co-founder, Lindsay Vaughn, and I sat down together and thought, okay, you know, what is it we want to do? And we realized we wanted to reach out to friends and other people and see where they were, what they thought, what, you know, what we could do as a group to basically deal with the situation, whatever it might be. And that was kind of the beginning of Voices.
Carolyn, I wonder how you think the past 2 years have changed the way, in your community at least, you're interacting with each other when it comes to politics. I think we've talked so much about having a rural-urban divide. Do you feel like your community, which is, you guys have said, is more rural, is that also divided? Or how do you feel about it, Carolyn?
Well, our community is historically longstanding, a Republican community. And I think Voices has tried to bridge some of the party divide and just provide a spot to say it was definitely formed as a result of the election. But at the same time, we're very focused on the community and holding our own representatives, part of our mission statement says, accountable, and also just making sure that our community has the opportunity to learn about the issues, whether they're local, state, or national. And I think for me personally, that's what has kept Voices going forward, intact, and engaged in so many different areas, is trying to keep our local people here in Princeton involved in learning and going forward as this whole political dynamic plays out.
Stephanie, how big is Princeton?
Officially within city limits, just about 8,000, just under 8,000 people.
And as I've been looking at the events that you guys have been having, I was looking on your Facebook page earlier. You did a lot of events, especially I was very interested, one on media literacy, trying to understand the difference between fake news and real news and having conversations among people. Are you finding that people are really interested in coming together regardless of their political background to try to understand these issues?
Yes. And we consider ourselves a transpartisan organization, And
what does that transpartisan? What does that mean?
There you go. And that is we, as you know, the people who got together and started talking and figuring out again where we were in the situation, and had thought, okay, you know, we are trying to be nonpartisan. We want to learn more about information because no one person has enough time to figure out what all is going on locally, statewide, nationally. And so we thought, okay, we're going to come at this with just trying to get the information, as Carolyn was saying. And then as we evolved, realized that while we have each of us has our own bias, we are not defined by that bias, and we actually consider that we transcend partisan divide. When we do events, they are about information that is as, I hate to be redundant, as informational as possible rather than to do a bias. We really want to know what it is that's going on. We don't want to, you know, get one particular view. We want to know as many points of the issue as we can. And so when we do events, it is all about getting information from as many disparate sources as possible. And people have responded to that. We do healthcare panels, we do media panels, we do environmental information, we do Earth Day celebrations, we do candidates forum for the local elections. We did for both primary and this current election. And we are very, very much trying to live up to our vision, which is that there is no more important voice than that of a well-informed, involved citizenry.
And to that point, Carolyn, as we saw our first major election since 2 years ago, how do you feel like you all did with voter turnout? How are you feeling this morning about Princeton and your community and how informed you all were for this election?
I think our community was much more informed than, you know, historically speaking. The voter turnout was fantastic. Stephanie might know the exact answer. I think it was somewhere around 60%, which is phenomenal. Personally, I feel really good about this election. My main concern after Trump was elected president was that the House and the Senate would stand up and do their job, and so we would have, you know, checks and balances. But personally, I don't see that that has happened the last couple years. So I'm very happy to see the House now be swayed democratically, simply for that whole check and balance. So I feel like mission accomplished, at least on this one point that was concerning me, because I think that's the best way for our government to manage is with those checks and balances. So I'm pleased with that result.
Stephanie, I think a lot of people are focused on Congress, as Carolyn was saying, or, of course, the governor is always a big seat that people are paying a lot of attention to. But there are a lot of different local ordinances, referendum on the ballot yesterday. Why do you think that's important to pay attention to as well?
Well, very important. One of the things that unfortunately did not pass here in Princeton was the building of a new school. And pretty narrow margin. There's still outstanding votes, but it looks like it did not pass. And as we know, one of the most fundamental rights, privileges we have is public education. Without the foundation of public education, I'm not sure what will happen to us. So all of these local issues, whether you're pro-tax, anti-tax, whatever, everyone in Illinois complains about the state of the roads. And if you don't have sort of this mechanism to pay for the fire department, the schools, the roads, I'm not quite sure what you see as an alternative. And so even though people consider, when you say government, everyone thinks Washington, D.C., it is not Washington, D.C. It's very much local on so many levels. It's just that we're all intertwined. It's a pretty small world now, and very little happens, again, statewide, nationally, that doesn't impact us here.
I wonder if folks who are listening across the state, maybe they're not particularly in the Princeton area, but if they're interested in doing something like this in their community, Stephanie, can they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. Absolutely, that would be terrific.
That's Stephanie Van Ortstrand, one of the co-founders of Voices from the Prairie. They're based in Western Illinois in Princeton. Carolyn Schaefer is a member of their group. She's also been with them. We will put information about Voices from the Prairie on our website. We will also tweet it out for folks who are interested. You can always email us as well, and we'll get that information to you. Stephanie, Carolyn, thanks for taking the time to speak with me this morning after the election. I appreciate it.
Chris, thank you Nyla. Very much.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, I will be speaking with our next governor, Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker, about what he plans to do over the next 4 years. So tune in tomorrow's program for that interview. Plus, in these divisive times, what are the things we believe we have in common? I had a conversation with Kwame Anthony Appiah about this earlier this week. I had a conversation with him in Chicago. We're going to have a chance to air that on tomorrow's program. He writes the ethicist column for the New York Times, and his new book is about why he believes those commonalities aren't as real as they think they are, and we should just be focusing on other things that unite us. I mentioned our website, 21stshow.org. That's got all of our contact information. If you want to leave us a voicemail, send us an email, find past shows, just head to 21stshow.org. You can find our Twitter handle and our Facebook page and all the ways to get in touch with us. We've got a great team who has been working very hard over the past 48 hours. Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, Alan Montesilio. Vashish Anand is our intern. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Morick. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. All of these folks have been working really hard behind the scenes all week. Special thanks to them. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.